Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we've been talking about it a lot the last several days. The Wisconsin recall is today. Every poll suggests it will fail. Even Progressive Policy has Walker at 50%, only up 3. But if you look at the Real Clear Politics average, be a big shock if Walker did not win today. The only real big name that I can think of that stumped for Tom Barrett was Bill Clinton. But let's just be fair to the president here in the Good Martini. He did send out a tweet last night, Jim, saying that it was important that everybody get behind Tom Barrett. So clearly Barack Obama hanging his reputation on this recall race.
140 characters. Actually, a little bit less. He couldn't spare. He couldn't bring all of those characters. He gave about 130 or so. Let's give credit where it's due, Greg. Late breaking news this morning that Obama will pin on Pinterest for Tom Barrett. And he also may mention something on Google+. So all those bazillions and bazillions of people following on those sites are likely to use it. Look, Bill Clinton, you mentioned. Bill Clinton doesn't have a day job. He goes around to fundraisers. He runs his Clinton Global Initiative. He hangs around with porn stars. Look, he's a retiree. He's got time on his hands. It's convenient for President Obama that he's got his day job, although ironically his day job consists of fundraising at political rallies and those type of events in places like Iowa and Minnesota, which, oh, by the way, aren't that far from Wisconsin.
Right.
And 6 fundraisers on Friday, 3 fundraisers in New York yesterday. If Obama took a little bit less time raising money for himself, maybe he could have gone and helped out Tom Barrett. The way the president is handling all this is so transparent that I almost wonder why there's no one around Axelrod or somebody saying, look, you know, if we're going to get whacked for not showing up, we might as well go there, make sure that our grassroots feel like we're fighting for them. And, you know, if we're going to lose, take our lumps. We've seen this with Scott Brown. We've seen this with Christie and Bob McDonnell in Virginia. Sometimes the guy you're backing isn't going to win, but I'm not so sure it really does the president that much good to stay away the way that he is. If you read the liberal blogs that are covering the Wisconsin race, they are just in disbelief that the DNC did not send money and that the president did not come out and help them out. Obama had said at some sort of rally for, you know, unions back in the campaign trail, if you guys go on strike, I'll put on my shoes and I'll walk with you and all that kind of stuff. And they just, you know, nobody believes it anymore. And I think this is more likely to do damage to Obama in November than any actual result out of tonight's recall. I think it's good news for Republicans. If Walker survives, things are looking good for him. I think this kind of shows the Republican base in this state is energized because of very unique circumstances of having 7 elections in roughly a year's worth of time. The bigger kind of significance of this is that if you're a Wisconsin progressive, why should you knock yourself out to help make sure Barack Obama wins the state in November? He wasn't there for you. Most progressives in Wisconsin are still going to show up and vote for Obama. But will they knock on doors? Will they stuff the envelopes? Will they do all the traditional activism things? And at this point, you have to wonder about, you know, lefty progressive union burnout. Many folks have noted half the Wisconsin members of SCME, public sector unions, they quit when they no longer had to pay dues. So Obama is probably going to go into November with much weaker public sector unions on his side, and that could have a very big impact in November. So everybody in Wisconsin has got to keep pulling out all the stops. This is decision day. You know, keep pushing, keep doing everything you need to do until the polls close. But the consequences of tonight really could be huge, reverberating throughout the country.
We've seen this before from him. He did some token campaigning, actually did probably a little bit more than that during the midterms. But for Barack Obama, the ultimate end game is the success of Barack Obama. And whatever else has to happen on the way there, so be it. And we'll see if there's some Obama fatigue among his grassroots supporters. So we'll find out. On to Martini number 2 now. And we've certainly played a number of ads from the Romney campaign talking about what he would do on day 1, why Barack Obama has been a failure. So President Obama shooting back here in the Bad Martini with a look at Mitt Romney's Massachusetts record.
It started like this.
I speak the language of business. I know how jobs are created.
But it ended like this. One of the worst economic records in the country. When Mitt Romney was governor, Massachusetts lost 40,000 manufacturing jobs, a rate twice the national average, and fell to 47th in job creation, fourth from the bottom. Instead of hiring workers from his own state, Romney outsourced call center jobs to India. He cut taxes for millionaires like himself while raising them on the middle class and left the state $2.6 billion deeper in debt.
Jim, a couple things that make me laugh there. First of all, that they once again remind us that Romney's a millionaire in case we forgot, and also that 47th is fourth from the bottom, since apparently a lot of people who are sympathetic to Obama might not know there are 50 states. The problem here, though, is that Romney is obviously staking this campaign on his ability to understand the economy, knows how to create jobs, and any dent this ad or other aspects of the Obama campaign might be able to achieve on that perception could be bad for Romney.
Yeah, a couple of things jump out at me about that ad. The first is that if you actually look at the actual unemployment rate, which is how a whole bunch of folks measure these things, is it actually went down from, I want to say, something like 5.6% to 4.7% under Romney's 4 years. Now, if you want to argue that compared to the national rate, that wasn't super-duper terrific, but, you know, he's starting out with a unemployment rate that looks pretty darn good, you know, less than 6%, looks pretty good right now, and then ended up at, you know, 4.7%, which is getting close to maximum employment. You don't really see it much below 4% nationally or in a lot of places. Right now in North Dakota, with the huge fracking natural gas and oil boom they're having up there, they got it to about 3%. But that's kind of almost about as good as you possibly can do. And so I look at that, Greg, and I think if Romney had this, you know, did to the whole country what he did to Massachusetts, we'd end up with a lower unemployment rate. That doesn't sound so bad. And so the argument from the Obama campaign is, well, if you look at the absolute numbers, that's not the best measure stick because a lot of people who couldn't find work in Massachusetts moved out of the state. And so the argument from the Obama folks is that, well, you're not really counting all of the unemployed. Yeah, that's what a lot of us have been saying about the national unemployment rate for like 3 years now. When you count the underemployed, people working part-time when they'd rather be working full-time, when you put in the people who've dropped out of the workforce, the U6 number is much higher, close to about 16%. And I think it was Jim Pethikakis who keeps pointing out that if the size of the workforce was the same today as it was back when Obama took office in January 2009, the unemployment rate would be either 10.9% or 11%, somewhere in that neighborhood. So if Obama wants to talk about job creation, fine. And if you want to say that Romney's job creation record in Massachusetts was not gangbusters, okay, fine, you can say that. He started out with pretty low unemployment, and he finished with, you know, slightly lower than pretty low unemployment. You could argue that he had a lot of, you know, wins at his back at that point. You know, Massachusetts has always been kind of a high-tech state that was already had a pretty good circumstance for you know, creating jobs. All of the talking about what Romney did in the middle part of last decade doesn't change anything about Obama's record. And Obama's record on job creation is crappy. Obama really thinks he can get Americans to overlook this between now and November. And I'm just baffled that they're following this strategy. But I guess, Greg, if we look at it, this might be the only card they have left to play.
On to Martini number three now. And another focal point of the campaign eventually, sometime this summer, will be Romney's selection of his running mate, and a name that's certainly been right there at the top of the speculation list for months now, has been Florida Senator Marco Rubio. He brings a lot of things to the table. He's from a critical swing state. He is very conservative. I think the base would love to have him as the vice presidential nominee. And, of course, he's Hispanic, which could be helpful in that electorate across the country in some of the pivotal states. So that topic came up during a Univision conversation yesterday between the anchor of a show called Al Punto and David Axelrod. And here's how that conversation went.
Polls show that President Barack Obama is going to win the Hispanic vote. But do you think that might change if Mitt Romney chooses Senator Marco Rubio as his running mate?
I think it would be an insult to the Hispanic community to choose Senator Rubio.
And Axelrod went on to say he thinks it's basically offensive to Hispanics to pick a Hispanic as a running mate, as though that will kind of paper over what he sees as Romney's policies that are hostile to the Hispanics. Jim, first of all, Romney's policies aren't that hostile to Hispanics. And secondly, this is once again, I think, part and parcel of the Democratic line of attack that if you don't think the right way as a minority, if you don't think the right way as a woman, enter Sarah Palin's name there, then all of a sudden you're completely unacceptable and somehow you're not a real member of that community.
Yeah, I mean, this is Axelrod really has slowly been melting down over the course of this campaign. And what he takes what is a perfectly legitimate argument, which is to say that no one should assume that because that someone who is Hispanic is going to vote for a ticket just because it has a Hispanic on it. Many folks will point out that Hispanics and Latinos tend to get lumped together when, In fact, their voting preferences and their attitudes and their perspective on the issues are much more diverse than a lot of media coverage would have you believe. Probably the simplest and most basic point is worth noting is that Marco Rubio is a son of Cuban immigrants in Florida, and Cuban Americans tend to, you know, vote differently than Mexican Americans and Americans from, you know, Central America and things like that. So there's a molecule of a legitimate point in what David Axelrod is saying. But he is saying instead, ipso facto, picking Marco Rubio is an insult to Hispanic Americans. And basically, I guess he's saying that Marco Rubio insults Hispanics by existing. I don't quite get what the logic is there. We all know Marco Rubio is a really bright, really charismatic, really charming, principled, tough, but, you know, very likable guy who would be a really fantastic choice for Romney. I think the only thing people might be a little wondering about is the issue of experience. Marco Rubio is, I believe, 39 years old, just got elected to the Senate last year, or in 2010. There might be some people who might wonder if he's ready to be commander-in-chief. We can hash that out at some other point. But instead of going with all that stuff, Axelrod has to suggest that somehow picking the guy who's really likable would insult people, which is, you know, a nonsensical argument. But again, this may be all that's left for David Axelrod, that all the good arguments are gone. And now he's at the spaghetti cooking stage of the campaign, in which he's just throwing stuff up against the wall and seeing what sticks.
And that's real early in the campaign to be already in that phase. We already saw it tried on Bain. We're starting to see the Massachusetts wing of this now, which we knew was coming. And now it's just ad hominem attacks all over the place. So as Lincoln once said, you can't build up a weak man by tearing down a strong man. And that's all the Obama campaign has left. So, Jim, going to be fun to watch.
Can't wait for tonight. Greg, I don't know about you. I will be watching MSNBC. Because even though CNN and Fox News, I'm sure, will give us perfectly good coverage of the Wisconsin recall results, I like the taste of the tears, Greg. Maybe I'm mean and cruel that way. Or just watching. Ed Schultz will be on the ground in Wisconsin. And I just have this vague vibe of the Joker in The Dark Knight of saying, I want to see it all burn. You know, he'll be furious and angry. You need to punish the voters of Wisconsin for not voting the right way. I don't know. We'll see how they react. But my guess is it'll be a lot of things very amusing to you, me, and folks who think like us, Greg, on MSNBC tonight.
Step one, win. Step two, enjoy the misery on MSNBC. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.